work.
Even a few dollars a month helps to keep us on the air.
Let's face it, without Pacifica, what do you have? NPR is too milquetoast. PBS, too milquetoast. Without Pacifica, we're dead in the water.
And that pledge line is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
And we're only asking those who can give it, those who can afford it. We know that there's some people out there who cannot afford it, and that's one of the problems. Those of us who relatively have must stand up for those who have not.
I'm sick and tired hearing people complain about, well, you know, the right wing has Fox News and they have this and they have that. The oppressor always has more money than the oppressed. We have to make use of the resources that we have. We have people, and we have people that can make contributions.
Here on WBAI 99.5 FM, we want to have the Tower Fund strong and healthy so we're not worried about it.
212-209-2950. Or you can go online at WBAI.org and donate to the Tower Fund.
Hey, this is Chaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. We discuss capitalism, the dominant economic ideology of today, impacting us all over the world. But is it on its way out, or will the market continue to forever dominate life on our planet? What are the origins of capitalism? What is the history of ideas and social forces that have shaped capitalism? What roles did the conquistadors and their conquest of Latin America and the Caribbean, colonialism, imperialism, and the slave trade all play in developing global capitalism? What have been some of the great economic debates of the past 200 years? Was Karl Marx right in his critique of capitalism? We hear from the Western world's top economists, historians, anthropologists, and sociologists, including Thomas Piketty, Noam Chomsky, Yanis Varoufakis, and David Graeber. Let's hear a short clip now from Capitalism.
400 years of slavery.
Capitalism, deadly.
How do you create a mark that's disembodied from society?
Well, it kind of dates back to enclosure. It didn't have to happen that way.
The fascinating thing I discovered when I started looking at the actual histories of the conquistadors is every single one of them was in debt.
Adam Smith points out that division of labor is monstrous.
I would like to suggest to you that Marx has rarely seemed more relevant.
I believe that open markets and free enterprise are the best imaginable force for improving human wealth and happiness.
Did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism?
Is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed?
How would Smith see the economic world around us?
I think Keynes would have said the problem is the hole in the economy.
Hayek really wrote The Road to Serfdom as a warning.
You always have to be careful with Marx about the one-liners.
Plenty, for me, was an intellectual earthquake.
I mean, if I had to stereotype Ricardo, I would say he would look like George Soros.
After 2008, was Darwinism inverted?
Markets are essentially a political construct.
There is
a contradiction between capitalism and democracy.
Today, a free market means freedom for rentiers.
Capitalism, everybody wants his share.
We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. And let me tell you what we are going to be offering. We are going to be offering an amazing six-part series, three DVDs that cost $498 to buy it regularly. But today we are offering it for a pledge of $240. I'd like to thank my friend and colleague from KPFA, Mitch Jeserich. It's been a really popular thank you, gift that Mitch has been offering it, and I want to make it available to the Sojourner Truth audience. It's a six-part series. It's three DVDs. Now, the series can be watched as a whole, but each episode stands alone, and we're going to be playing clips from that today, and it's an impressive series that makes economics accessible through an interdisciplinary approach that explores the work of great thinkers while embedding economics in specific social, political, and historical context. Now, a lot of people are wondering, is capitalism in trouble? Is it on its way out? What exactly will replace capitalism? There have been great debates going on. And some people are also posing the question, was Karl Marx right in his critique of capitalism? So we're offering up those three DVDs, a six-part series on three DVDs, the value of which is $498 today, $240 value. Please pick up the phone and call us at 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. 212-209-2950. Three DVDs of Capitalism. It's an award-winning series. It was voted one of the 10 best programs on French television. So you can pledge at the $240 level and you'll get the Capitalism 3 DVD set. What I'd like to do now is to go directly to a clip from the Capitalism series. We'll be featuring those clips today. And we're going to be hearing from David Graeber. David Graeber is one of the people who helped to call and think through Occupy Wall Street. But here's David Graeber on capitalism's beginnings, colonialism, and the conquistadors. The number to call, 212-209-2950. I need at least five more of you calling right now at 212-209-2950. Let's go to that clip right now.
Smith was the first person to really lay it out elaborately and explicitly. Once upon a time, when there was no money, people would have to swap things directly. You know, I would say, tell you what, I'll give you 20 chickens for that cow. All right, maybe 25 chickens.
When we lived in caves, there were no shopping malls. And people's manners were Neanderthals. I'll give you this or that, that for this. We'll make a trade called barter. I'll give you this or that, that for this. We'll have it made with barter.
You know, people would negotiate. They'd come to a deal. That's how the economy worked. Gradually that becomes inconvenient. Maybe you don't want my chickens. I don't have anything else you want. So we settle on one thing that everybody's going to want. That becomes money.
It was a radical idea. For the first time, economic activity was stripped of its complex social context. Psychology, cultural norms, religion, and community, and studied in isolation as if in a laboratory.
It makes perfect intuitive sense. The problem is it isn't true. No one's ever been able to find any place where that's the way ordinary transactions take place. And if you think about it, it's kind of obvious why they wouldn't, because it assumes that even in a Neolithic village, everybody's going to be dealing with each other in what economists call the spot trade. I give you something, you give me something, we walk away.
Adam Smith's idea of barter and trade could have easily been demonstrated by the way these hunters in this isolated community barter and trade their hunt. The problem, however, is that they don't, and they never have. Anthropologists call this system of communal sharing reciprocity. For the Mayhunas, as for most indigenous tribes, it is a thing of the past. Today, no one in the village will eat these machas. They will be taken to market, a few hours boat ride away, and sold.
Adam Smith, you can't really blame him. He didn't really have the evidence. But since then, economists have been told over and over again by anthropologists, well, no, people don't actually do that. So we've been looking for a society like that for 200 years. They don't exist. Yet they still feel obliged to tell the same story. So clearly this story is doing something for them, which has nothing to do with history or empirical reality.
The Mayhunas did not evolve from bartering and trading into a market economy, no matter what 18th century theory would have us believe. Rather, colonization and the market system tracked them down in the 19th century, once rubber was found in the Amazon. Many Mayhunas and other tribespeople were enslaved and murdered during the rubber boom that followed. Only a few fading photographs remain, and the collective tribal memory of their transformation into day laborers. So if Adam Smith's science of man cannot explain the building blocks of a market economy, how did the market evolve historically? Capitalism was not the product of ideas, but of historical processes that transformed the Mayhunas, and indeed all of us, into Homo economicus. These sweeping historical changes were unleashed by a single key event. The discovery of the Americas was a formative event for the scientific revolution. But what was its connection to the evolution of capitalism?
The interesting thing is that our entire arguments about world history, I think, are on a false basis. We argue, why is it that Europe was in a position to conquer the world and not anybody else? I think the answer lies in this peculiar relationship between lenders and entrepreneurs, as I call them. And if you think of the conquistadors as the archetypal entrepreneur who always wants more and more, who's always creating something out of nothing and in order to make more and more money.
So while Chinese voyages of discovery were decreed by an emperor, Western discoveries began as private initiatives, unleashing a completely different process. The conquest of Mexico in 1519 by Cortes is an example of this new link created between geographic discoveries, colonization, and money.
The fascinating thing I discovered when I started looking at the actual histories of the conquistadors is every single one of them was in debt. Cortez basically got himself deeper and deeper into debt. He's a gambler. He said, to hell of it, I'm never going to get out of debt. I'm going to borrow even more money and just gamble everything on this crazy expedition.
When asked by the envoy of Montezuma, the Mexica king, about his obsession with gold, Cortez replied, "My companions and I are suffering from a disease of the heart for which there is no cure but gold."
As soon as he actually conquered Tenochtitlan, which took a very long time, when he divided up the spoils, he'd arranged things in such a way that none of his soldiers actually got any of the money. They ended up in debt because he charged them for the cost of medical care. He charged them for replacement weapons. He charged them for everything. They were all in debt. They were out up in arms. They were going to kill him. He finally said, look, okay, I tell you what. I'm not going to let you off the hook. I'll give you a 10-year moratorium. Go off to the provinces and govern those. And so they became these incredibly rapacious governors who just extracted as much money as possible. I think that sense of outrage, of shame, humiliation, indignation, like we just fought for an entire year and somehow survived one of the greatest battles in world history, and they're still not paying me anything. They just say, I owe them. This is crazy. And that sense of outrage and unlimited power combined turns them into monsters. You never actually see the guys that Cortez or people like that owe money to. You don't really know who they were. But that relationship between the financiers who are expecting their 5% or whatever it is, 7% a year interest, and the entrepreneur, as it were, the warrior who goes out there and conquers worlds, that relationship becomes the very basis of our modern economic monetary system, even though we no longer think of it that way.
The Spanish conquistadors, with their voracious appetite for precious metals, found here a mountain of silver. They called it Cerro Rico, the rich mountain. Over the three centuries that followed, more than 62 metric tons of silver was extracted from Cerro Rico at great human cost.
If you manage the silver, that is no good quality of silver, no like in the colonial time. No.
It was this silver that triggered an explosion in international trade. In Britain, the global market fueled by silver from the Americas had a completely different impact. While in China, it encouraged small producers. Here, it destroyed them. The silver that flooded countries like Spain created a growing demand for English wool, which made raising sheep more profitable. Peasants were displaced to make room for more sheep. The process was called enclosure.
It was coercive. I wouldn't say it was massively violent. There was just a lot of rioting and a lot of resistance and a lot of poverty and people shoved into urban situations which had a very high death rate. So in a sense it was violent insofar as the death rate in the emerging new industrial towns was higher than it was in the countryside.
Throw down houses, wrote Thomas More. They pluck down towns and leave nothing standing, but only churches to be made into sheep houses. This army of dispossessed, homeless, and jobless peasants have become a potential labor force, helping to create a labor market.
This is Margaret Prescott. That is an impressive clip from an impressive series that we are offering up today. It's a 3-DVD set. We shouldn't wallow in our ignorance. We should get the analysis. We should know exactly what's going on. And for those of you, I just want to mention the U.S. companies and universities that benefited from the transatlantic slave trade. AIG, okay, that's one of them. Bank of America. Anybody out there got an account at Bank of America? Wells Fargo, which was the Georgia Railroad and Banking Company and the Bank of Charleston, owned or accepted slaves as collateral. They later became Wells Fargo. Bank of America grew out of the Bank of Metropolis, which also accepted slaves as collateral. J.P. Morgan Chase made a fortune from the slave trade. Fleet of Boston, Brown University. You know any students that go to Brown University? Named for the Brown brothers, who gave money to the university. They were slave traders, and they ran a factory that used slave-grown cotton. University Hall at Brown University was built in part by slave labor. Harvard, endowed with money from a slave owner and sugar girl from the Caribbean. Princeton, they all owe us money. As far as I'm concerned, where is my reparations? Where is your reparations? They try to make us, you know, we look at wealthy people today. I go to Europe and I look at the castles and you look at all the fancy houses, and they hand down their wealth from one generation to the next. And the wealth, the average wealth of black people, black women in the United States is $5. $5. Why is that? But all of this money made on the slave trade, you know, this is the last call for this material. You're going to get a full analysis and understanding of capitalism. You're getting the 3-part DVD set that has been the most popular gift. And I want the Sojourner Truth audience to be part of that. To make our goal, I'll need 13 people calling and pledging $20 a month for 1 year. 212-209-2950. I need at least 5 more of you calling right now at 212-209-2950. I can tell you that to purchase this series, to go online and to try to purchase this series, you will be paying $498 today. $240 pledge for that. So incredible savings here. And you're also helping to keep us on the air. Remember, we are the last bastion of listener-sponsored radio. As a thank you for your support for WBAI, your support for listener-sponsored radio, call us at 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Let me tell you about this 3-DVD set. It's an impressive series that makes economics accessible through an interdisciplinary approach that explores the work of great thinkers while embedding economics in specific social, political, and historic context. Now, the series, you could watch it as a whole, but each of the 6 series, there are 52-minute episodes, and they're also designed to stand alone. So these are ideal for a classroom, for your organization, or for your church, or synagogue, or mosque. Please pick up the phone and call us at 212-209-2950. I need at least 5 more of you calling right now at 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. You heard a little known information on who the conquistadors were, and the fact that entrepreneurs, private people, helped to fund a lot of these explorations coming into the Caribbean and to the Americas. And those guys who fought and killed so many native people, did that genocide, a lot of them were in debt themselves. So we heard in that last clip about how the conquistadors and their whole conquest helped to develop global capitalism. And then across the pond, so to speak, in the UK, about the displacement of peasants and what they call enclosure, right? And how the developing people into basically wage slaves, people who formerly were independently able to survive growing their food, etc., now being forced into wage slavery. We're offering up that 3-DVD set. The pledge level is $240. We need 13 of you calling and getting that to make our goal. And I know that the Sojourner Truth listener will really appreciate this material, because so much of exploitation of the global South in particular, but of all of us, including in Europe and right here in the United States, helped to develop this monster in many ways, which is the unfettered market of capitalism. You know what? The 3 6-part series of capitalism on 3 DVDs, to buy it online, you're paying around $500. Well, it's $498, $2 short of $500 today. The pledge level, $240. Don't sit on your hands. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth, you cannot take WBAI for granted. You know, the doors could shut. There could be no Sojourner Truth or all of the other shows you hear on WBAI. We must not let that happen. And I see some phone lines open. I've got like, what, 4 phone lines open right now? Last call for this material. 212-209-2950. I need to see how much we need to raise right now. I want those phone lines full because we are trying to create a new world. We're trying to break down the barriers of race and nation among us. We can't do it if we don't have the foundation, the information on which to build our movements. 212-209-2950. I've got like about 30 seconds. I've got 2 callers on the line right now. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Also on the 6-part series, the 3-DVD set, Capitalism, they talk about Keynesian economics, about those following John Maynard Keynes, all right, whose allegiance lies with Friedrich Hayek. If you don't know these people, please, we need to be informed. The media, they've dumbed down America. Our students aren't learning this stuff. We don't have this information. 212-209-2950. I need to raise another $1,000. So if you could call and make a $500 matching pledge, it's tax deductible, $1,000. We need it right now, but help us to be informed about capitalism and why this crisis in capitalism is happening. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Thank you for calling and pledging. 212-209-2950. You cannot take WBAI for granted. You know, the doors could shut. There could be no Sojourner Truth or all of the other shows you hear on WBAI. We must not let that happen. 212-209-2950. I want those phone lines full because it's crunch time for Pacifica Radio. It's crunch time for WBAI. And you know what? I want to make sure that WBAI stays alive. I want to make sure that all of the work that's being done now to make WBAI sustainable, the changes that are being made. We have you, the listener, front and centered. Here at Sojourner Truth, that is our priority. Our priority is the listener. You are our priority, and we want to make sure that you can get the best radio that you can. We have very few resources, but WBAI is like the little station that could. It's like Pacifica, the last bastion of listener-sponsored radio in these United States. Let's not lose it. If we lose it, that is huge. Please pick up the phone and call us at 212-209-2950. I need at least 5 more of you calling right now at 212-209-2950. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Welcome. I'm Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Millions of people across the United States headed to the polls to elect a new president. After several days of closely watched vote counting, Democrat Joe Biden was declared president with Kamala Harris as his vice president. Election observers and political analysts are saying the Biden-Harris ticket won fair and square. Yet Donald Trump refuses to admit that he lost and make his way out of the White House. Instead, Donald Trump is doubling down, using any legal means he can to maintain his grip on power. Even as we absorb the reality of the democracy as practiced in the United States being challenged, we look forward to what many hope will be a new day in the United States, and plans are underway to work to shift the balance of power in the Senate, with 2 runoff elections for senators who would represent the state of Georgia taking place on January 5th, 2021. And many are asking the question, they are assessing, how did we get to this place? To understand the present, we must learn lessons from the past, what worked, what did not work in the quest for truth, justice, and peace. Here are some voices from the Pacifica Radio Archives. The first clip you'll hear, indigenous rights activist John Trudell warning us that we must make an alliance with the earth, followed by a more dire warning for those who stay silent in the face of injustice.
I would like to see us make an alliance with the earth, and we can all do it. You know, people ask me, well, in Los Angeles, how can, you know, hey, I'm on the planet, man. No matter where I go, I'm on the earth, you know. You know, and I, some concrete doesn't necessarily sever me, you know. But it's our energy, our power source. You know, our food comes from it, the water, we're a part of it. We're made up of the same elements. So it's only natural to me, if nothing else. It's logical, but it's only natural to me that this is where our power connection is. And it's not in, you know, in these other things, because at some point, you know, they have already created the economic realities to take all of us, all right, and they're going to be working to pay off a national debt for the next 100 or 200 years. People got to understand the reality that that means slavery. Got to understand that reality. All right? It means slavery.
First they came for the Muslims. And I didn't speak out because I wasn't a Muslim. Then they came to detain immigrants indefinitely, solely upon the certification of the Attorney General, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't an immigrant. Then they came to eavesdrop on suspects consulting with their attorneys, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a suspect. Then they came to prosecute non-citizens before secret military commissions, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a non-citizen. Then they came to enter homes and offices for unannounced sneak and peek searches, and I didn't speak out because I had nothing to hide. Then they came to reinstate COINTELPRO and resume the infiltration and surveillance of domestic, religious, and political groups, and I didn't speak out because I had stopped participating in any groups. Then they came for anyone who objected to government policy because it only aided the terrorists and gave ammunition to America's enemies, and I didn't speak out because I didn't speak up. And then they came for me, and by that time, no one was left to speak up.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. I want to go on to another clip. First, I'm so delighted to welcome Mark Torres, who is the executive director of the Pacifica Radio Archives. He is our in-house historian.
Thank you, Margaret. Having that history to build upon with the current activated youth and citizens that are standing up and finally realizing that democracy is not a given. It's participatory.
And Mark Torres, I want to quickly go on to another clip because I want our listeners to hear. This is just such an amazing collection. You know, the Pacifica Radio Archives, they appraise, they collect, they organize, they describe, they preserve the creative work generated by or produced in association with Pacifica Radio. And then they make it available for research and reference use, universities and schools all across the country and all across the world. Let us go now to a clip from Martin Luther King and in 1961 about public officials doing wrong. And Mark, listening to this, you would think he could be talking about some public officials right now, today. Let's go to that clip.
Many public officials are using the power of their offices to defy the law of the land through their irresponsible actions. That inflammatory statements and that dissemination of distortions and half-truths They have succeeding in arousing abnormal fears and morbid hatreds within the minds of underprivileged and uneducated whites, leaving them in such a state of excitement and confusion that they are led to acts of meanness and violence that no normal person would commit. We see a glaring example of this in New Orleans, Louisiana today. This defiance also expresses itself in the resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan, determined to preserve segregation at any cost. This organization employs methods that are crude and primitive. It draws its members from underprivileged groups who see in the Negro's rising status a political and economic threat. And although the Klan is important politically and openly denounced from all sides, it remains a dangerous force which thrives on racial and religious bigotry. That is always the implied threat of violence. And then that are the white citizens' councils. Since they occasionally recruit members from a higher social and economic level than the Klan, a halo of partial respectability hovers over them. But like the Klan, they are determined to preserve segregation despite the law. They base their defense on the legal maneuvers of interposition and nullification. Unfortunately for those who disagree with the councils, their methods do not stop with legal tactics. Their methods range from threats and intimidation to economic reprisals against Negro men and women. These methods also extend to whites who will dare to take a stand for justice. They demand absolute conformity from whites and abject submission from Negroes. The citizens' councils often argue piously that they abhor violence, but their defiance of the law, their unethical methods, and their vitriolic public pronouncements inevitably create the atmosphere in which violence thrives. And as a result of the council's activities, most white moderates in the South no longer feel free to discuss in public the issues involved in desegregation for fear of social ostracism and economic reprisals. What channels of communication had once existed between whites and Negroes have thus now been largely closed. And certainly this is tragic. Men often hate each other because they fear each other. And they fear each other because they don't know each other, and they don't know each other because they are separated from each other. No greater tragedy can befall a society than the attempt to live in monologue rather than dialogue.
Monologue rather than dialogue. I'm Mark Torres. This is just an amazing clip. I just couldn't believe my ears listening to this. The number is 516-620-3602. We are trying to raise money. We, at Margaret Prescott, I'm here with Mark Torres. We are offering a thank you gift for those of you who pledge at the $250 level, 1,300 hours of original collection of historic Pacifica Radio Archives recordings. The number to call, 516-620-3602. Mark Torres, I mean, when you look at the man in the White House, his refusal to really speak out strongly against white supremacy, and there you have Martin Luther King talking about the citizens' councils, and we could think today of these militias, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, the Patriot Prayer, Boogaloo, and so many more. I mean, this material, historic, but so relevant for today. Mark Torres.
Absolutely. The days of sitting in our lazy boys and thinking that our elected officials will take care of everything are over. Democracy is participatory, and Many of the tapes in the Pacifica Radio Archives are regular citizens that stand up. They were sick and tired of not being represented. They were sick and tired of injustice. They were sick and tired of disrespect and inequality, and they stood up, like Rosa Parks, like Fannie Lou Hamer, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., like Malcolm X, like James Baldwin, like so many of our heroes that came before us. They inspire us to do what is necessary today. These voices are contained in the Pacifica Radio Archives. There's no collection like it in the world. It's unique recordings of these luminaries in their own voice. That's what's so special about this collection. It's a great time to give a gift, $250 for this jump drive of material that in past years we would give out a 10 CD collection for a hundred CD collection for $1,000.
I remember that.
and now it's over 1,300 hours for $250. Wow. The gift of knowledge is the best gift you can give out, especially with these online learning experiences that we're all facing today, with our kids being homeschooled. They are remote learning on their laptops. What a great way to learn with these incredible voices throughout history.
Yeah, what a great point, Mark. And it would be great for people who call 516-620-3602. And please, if you want to get this and gift it to the school that you graduated from, your high school, even your middle school, your university.
The number to call is area code 516-620-3602.
John Coltrane, Leonard Cohen, George Orwell's 1984 full audiobook is on there. Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man full audiobook.
Wow.
Allen Ginsberg, Malcolm X. I didn't even get to play the Malcolm X clip that I really wanted to play, where he talked about, you know, if you're black, you were born in jail in the United States, and talked about black people and the black vote. And again, a lot of people are crediting, in particular, black women and black people, indigenous people, people of color, basically, for the Biden win. The Navajo Nation turned out in huge numbers for this election. And this...
intention of spreading and contaminating its native wild relatives, right? So people are concerned about bringing back the wild American chestnut. Well, the genetically engineered chestnut could very well replace the wild American chestnut. That incredible evolutionary history and heritage of the American chestnut could be lost forever if these genetically engineered chestnuts are released into the forest, because they are not wild American chestnuts. They are genetically engineered chestnuts. And, you know, they did not evolve over time and in the ecosystems. The ecosystems do not know how to respond to these genetically engineered trees with these new transformations. So it's a really serious issue from the perspective of precedent. If this unprecedented event is allowed to move forward, releasing genetically engineered trees into the wild to spread and contaminate, this could set a precedent for all kinds of GMOs that could be then released into the environment under the guise of conservation or protection of whatever. And I mean, that's just, it's extremely dangerous. So there's the precedent issue that we need to be concerned about. In addition, as you said, it's not just in the U.S., it's elsewhere. And even with the genetically engineered chestnut, one thing I wanted to mention is it doesn't respect boundaries, right? It's not going to stay within the boundaries of the United States just because the USDA said it's okay to grow here. It's very likely going to contaminate other American chestnut trees in Canada. And the variety of American chestnut tree that's found in Canada is actually considered an endangered species in Canada. And the Canadian Chestnut Council, which is trying to restore the American chestnut in Canada, is very concerned about this genetically engineered tree pollen or seeds getting across the Canadian border and contaminating their remnant population of American chestnuts. So, you know, the Canadian groups that are working on restoration of the chestnut are very worried about this GE chestnut being approved. But it's not just this chestnut. This chestnut would be a door opener for the other GE trees, which includes, as I mentioned earlier, genetically engineered poplar trees, which are being developed in a variety of places, but most aggressively, I'd say they're being developed at Oregon State University by a researcher named Steve Strauss. And he's working with an organization, a startup, a pop-up in the Bay Area that wants to create genetically engineered poplar trees explicitly for carbon offset forestry plantations. And like I said earlier, carbon offset forestry is this bogus accounting system that says that trees can absorb fossil carbon that's been released into the atmosphere, which is just not true. There's no science behind it at all, but it sounds nice. So, you know, people like to believe it's possible. But anyway, so that there's genetically engineered poplar trees being developed for commercial purposes. There are genetically engineered pine trees, radiata pine trees, loblolly pine trees, mainly, that are being developed both in the United States and in Latin America as timber trees predominantly. Then there are also eucalyptus trees, as I mentioned earlier, being developed for faster growth, for reduced lignin, for herbicide tolerance, and a variety of other traits. And those would be primarily for pulp and paper production, but also potentially for biomass wood pellet production. So, you know, there's a lot of research going on. It's mostly in Brazil and the United States. Those are the two countries leading the research right now, but there is some research going on in Europe. There is some research going on in South Africa. But it's the United States and Brazil that we're most concerned about, where the research is really being pushed hard by industry. And this American chestnut, as I mentioned, this GE American chestnut is unfortunately being used by the industry to open the doors to these other commercial trees.
Right. Thank you, Ann Peterman. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Our guest, Ann Peterman, executive director of the Global Justice Ecology Project. And we're discussing the threat of the problems of the possible release of genetically engineered trees into wild forests here in the United States. Ann Peterman, I wanted to ask you about this international outfit, the Forest Stewardship Council, and what their position is. They're headquartered in Germany, and tell us the role that they play. And I know they met last fall in Bali, Indonesia, and I wondered what came out of that conference, Peterman.
Yeah, the Forest Stewardship Council was founded in, I believe, the early 90s, if I'm not mistaken. I could have that year wrong. But anyway, it was founded with the idea that that plantation forestry should be overseen, that the production of pulp and paper trees should be overseen by a body that tries to make sure that they're environmentally and socially sustainable. So the Forest Stewardship Council, that was its original mission. And as early as 20 plus years ago, one of their fundamental principles was no genetically engineered trees in their certified plantations, no genetically engineered trees or tree product could have the FSC certification on it. And that has been a major roadblock to the development of commercial genetically engineered trees, because the FSC has a major share of the certified wood and wood product market. So because they do, companies want their seal of approval. It opens up lots of markets for them. There's a lot of issues with the FSC about what they've decided is certified, could be certified as sustainable. And they're getting a lot of criticism from social justice groups, environmental groups, forest protection groups, because of that, indigenous groups, because of that. But the one thing that they have done well is this genetically engineered tree ban. And it's been really important for the campaign to keep GE trees from being commercialized. Industry recognizes that. And so they have been working with these corporate funded researchers to try to pressure the FSC to overturn that ban. And they have had very little success until they started calling it research. They want to do more research into GE trees to see what the possible effects could be. And the problem with that is, once you crack that door open, once you have the FSC doing field trials of, and that's what they're talking about, the FSC itself doing field trials of genetically engineered trees, you have created a crack in that door, a crack in that ban on GE trees that could very easily be further and further wedged open. So that's another area that the campaign is working on, trying to make sure that the FSC does not move forward with this weakening of their ban on genetically engineered trees, and making sure that the board does not move ahead with that. There's a lot of the FSC membership that is very concerned about GE trees, that does not want that, you know, fundamental principle that they've had for 20 years to be overturned. And many do not believe that the board has the power to do that. But the board is moving ahead anyway with this learning process, as they call it. So that's an ongoing issue and an ongoing fight that's going on kind of simultaneous to this GE American chestnut issue. So that's what's happening with the FSC. And that's another area that we hope people will check out, the stopgetrees.org website, to see what's going on.
Right. And we will want you to let our listeners know how they could comment, because the comment period finishes up in just 2 days to be able to stop this release of GE trees into wild forests in the United States. But tell us a little bit about glyphosate and the role that has played in relation to GE trees, because we certainly know they've played a role in the GE crops and GE seeds, and Monsanto and Roundup, which I consider to be really evil. just tell us a bit about glyphosate and the concerns about that in the development of the whole GE tree industry. And Peterman.
Right. Well, yes. So Monsanto Chemical Company, biotechnology company, back in 1999, they formed a joint initiative with timber companies, International Paper, Midwest Vaco, I forget who, Fletcher Challenge Forest out of New Zealand. They formed a joint forest biotechnology initiative that later went on to be called ArborGen. And the idea was that they would be creating these commercial GE trees that would have similar traits to what we had seen in genetically engineered crop plants. So glyphosate resistance has been one of the biggest sellers for Monsanto and the biotechnology industry, in crops, right? GMO soy, that's glyphosate resistant. GMO corn, that's glyphosate resistant, and so on. Monsanto made a lot of money off of that. And as was predicted by GMO people were concerned about GMO crops. The overuse of glyphosate, as I mentioned earlier, the fact that glyphosate tolerance was engineered into these crop plants increased the use of glyphosate 300 to 600% in many cases. That, you know, without a doubt and without any other possibility, really, led to the development of glyphosate-resistant weeds, right? So the weeds have gotten so much of the glyphosate exposure over so many generations that they have evolved resistance, that which was predicted. So now what we have is companies, chemical companies, and biotechnology companies creating new crops that are resistant to a much more toxic chemical, which is called dicamba, which has Agent Orange, the same components as Agent Orange. So, you know, we've gone from right into the fire there, with the GMO crops. So we started with glyphosate resistance and now we've moved on to more toxic chemicals. And they're looking at the same model, the same failed model with trees. They're, as I mentioned earlier, Suzano Timber Company in Brazil, which is the largest timber company in Brazil and maybe the largest timber company in the world, has started developing these glyphosate resistant eucalyptus trees. And we anticipate the exact same thing will happen. Brazil is already the largest single country user of agrochemicals in the world. And this is only going to make that worse. We anticipate these eucalyptus plantations, if they actually start developing them, would be sprayed from the air, probably from helicopters and planes with glyphosate. Enormous quantities of it would end up in the water, in the soil. It would drift on the neighboring communities, causing contamination of, people's homes, people's crops, children outside who are outside when the spraying happens. This has happened with GMO soy and GMO corn, and will easily happen again if these GE eucalyptus trees are planted en masse, as Suzano hopes they will be. So yeah, they wanted to take the GMO traits that were in crops and apply them to trees. That's the first one that they've done. But they would also like to make trees that are insect resistant, you know, that trees that kill the insects to try to use them. Can you imagine what a disaster that would be? They want to make trees that grow faster. They want to make trees that are drought resistant. They want, you know, all of these different things that require manipulating the genetics of the tree in ways that cause unpredictable mutations that damage the genomes of the tree. And it's hard to explain just exactly how disastrous this direction of the forestry industry is going to be for forests, for people, for wildlife, and so on.
Yeah, for all of us living on this planet. And Ann Peterman, we just have about a minute or so, but just underscoring your point about insects, I read an article recently that said over 400,000 people a year die because of the disappearance of some insects. I mean, every part of nature plays a role here. And Tom Goldtooth of the Indigenous Environmental Network, he said that among Indigenous peoples, they consider these GE trees of having no spirit. I mean, you know, anybody who loves trees and who loves the forest know of the energy that is there and the healing that's there. One could only imagine what will happen, not only above the ground, but underground, as the trees have systems of supporting each other. And very quickly, tell us, how can people comment on this and try the next couple of days to really stop this release into the wild forest of GE trees? What should they do, Ann Peterman?
Sure. Yes, it's really important that people contact the USDA via their comment period and tell them that they should not allow these genetically engineered chestnut trees to be released into wild forests. And you can find out more information about how to do that on our website. The address is stopgetrees.org/stop Darwin-GE-Trees. So it's pretty easy to remember, and you'll find all the information you need there, the link to the comment period, more information about it, and so on. And I really appreciate, Margaret, you're letting me let people know that. So stopgetrees.org/stop-ge-trees.
Okay. All righty. Ann Peterman, I'm afraid we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. We link with the Global Justice Ecology website on the Sojourner Truth website as well. Thank you, Ann. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives. Today's show produced by me. I'd like to thank our assistant producer, Alicia Vargas, our board op, Gary Baca. Sojourner Truth will be back.
This is the mic check for Cat Radio Cafe.
Testing.
Testing.
Tune into Cat Radio Cafe Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright on Tuesday, January 24th at 9 p.m. will be joined by filmmakers Stephen Fischler and Joe Sucher to discuss their films on American radicalism, including From Swastika to Jim Crow and Red Squad, among the latest streaming releases from Ovid's collection, Anarchy in the USA.
Tuesday night at 9 here on WBAI.
Cat Radio Cafe.
Hey, do cats drink coffee?
Yes, they're radical cats.
Aren't they all?